Well, needless to say, it's been a very tough year for the 49ers. But on today's conference call with Kyle Shanahan, I think perspective took a whole new meaning and shape. I've covered the 49ers since 2017, so I've tracked all the ups and downs of the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch era. From starting off 0-9 in that 2017 season to climbing all the way back up to 6-10 with the 5 straight wins, and then the Jimmy Garoppolo ACL tear in 2018, Super Bowl run, yet Super Bowl defeat in the 2019 season, the hellish 2020 season, and then the exhilarating 2021, 2022, and 2023 seasons, but all of those with ups and downs within them. I've covered all of that, but today was the very first time that I heard Kyle Shanahan emotionally break down. And it wasn't because of play on the football field. It was because of the tragedies that have happened to the 49ers family off of it. We all know that Charvarius Ward's one-year-old daughter, Amani Joy, passed away last month. Now, Trent Williams is dealing with similar loss. Trent Williams and his wife, Sandra, they're twins, both passed away. One during pregnancy, one on November 24th, which was the day that the 49ers played the Packers. Trenton Williams Jr. delivered stillborn. And Kyle Shanahan was asked to confirm this today on his conference call. And he did, and I mean, his voice cracked when he was talking about it. Kyle had to quiet it down. He had to take a step back. The relationship between Kyle Shanahan and Trent Williams goes back a long time. Washington drafted Trent Williams back when Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator there. Mike Shanahan was the head coach there. And it reminds you of the familial bonds between a lot of these players and coaches. And the 49ers have striven to build a locker room and build a building that is like family. Shanahan today had some really good insight into how the 49ers handle this, but when you could hear it affect him the way that it did, I think that it was immediately crystallized for me that the 49ers have a structure here. And this is something I already knew, but sometimes, unfortunately, it takes events and tragedies like this to really bring it to light. But the 49ers have a structure here that really cares, that really brings the meaning to this. This goes beyond football. And it really does help put one down season. This is the 49ers' first down season since 2020. You know, that the rest of the NFL, the vast majority of it cannot say that, but it really puts that one down season into perspective, because there is stuff out here that matters a whole lot more than football. And there are guys, there are players, you know, that you could view as just, you know, commodities out on the field, guys who are delivering for the football team. Well, they're dealing with tragedies, ups and downs in their own family lives. And for two of these situations to happen to the 49ers within the course of a month, the human cost of this is enormous. We can put aside the injuries. The 49ers have a record amount of money on injured reserve again this year, just like 2020. We can put aside the bad scheduling luck. The 49ers have the worst net rest differential that we've ever seen out of an NFL schedule. We can put aside the physical toll that the 49ers have gone through over the course of the past three seasons. As I always like to say, 60 games in three seasons, yet no Super Bowls to show for it. So they haven't gotten that boost that you normally get after running your body through the ground. We can put all that aside. The off-field tragedies alone that the 49ers have had to work through, between Charvarius Ward's incident, this one with Trent Williams, twins, and then the Ricky Pearsall shooting. Ricky Pearsall got shot in the chest on August 31st. On August 31st, miraculously, he survived. But the combined human cost of all these things, I mean, it's just time to take a pause and acknowledge that and talk about all that has transpired, because it is more about more than what just has happened on the field for the 49ers this year. It's all connected. These are humans playing the sport of football. And for one team to deal with all that it has this year in the 49ers, I think it's absolutely staggering. And we heard the impact and the effect of just one of these situations in particular in Kyle Shanahan's voice when he was talking today. The question was asked by Jennifer Lee Chan, NBC Sports Bay Area. She wanted to talk about or confirm the news, the tragedy surrounding Trent Williams. And she asked if Trent was going to take some time off for that this week. And Kyle Shanahan said he did a little bit of that last week. Something that happened last week, and he was there at the hospital with her and got to meet him and say bye, obviously speaking of his stillborn son. And then he had to cremate him on Friday. So he's been dealing with that and he's working through it. But we're all just trying to be here for him through it all. Shanahan went on to talk about the real life issues that the 49ers have dealt with Trent Williams and Charvarius Ward. And he said, that's stuff we do every day. When you've got to deal with tragedies like this, it's hard as a coach. It's hard as a friend. It's hard as a family member. It's hard for everybody. But we spend a lot of time with each other. And that's what's cool about a football team. Whatever you go through, the good or the bad, we go through it together. And I do like for those guys, because I do like that they have this. They have a group of guys that they can go to, a group of guys that could see them every day. And you can't ever fully escape that grief. But I do think it's nice for those guys to have another avenue to get out on the football field, to get around teammates and things like that. I thought it was a huge step by Mooney, by Charvarius Ward this week, just from a personal level. No one really, when something like that happens, you don't really want to jump back into anything. You've got to kind of make yourself. And I was really proud of him fighting through this week. So let's take a pause there. Kyle Shanahan said he was proud of Charvarius Ward fighting through this week. I saw a lot of people on the internet blasting Charvarius Ward yesterday. Personally, I pointed out that Charvarius Ward didn't have the best plays when he let the first Buffalo touchdown get to the edge and then obviously gave up the receiving touchdown a little bit later. But the insensitivity of a lot of people screaming for a benching or, you know, saying things that were a lot worse when they knew what Charvarius Ward has been dealing through, when that was very public information, it gets to be a little bit ridiculous. And this was before people have known what Trent Williams is dealing with. So I think it's just so important to step back and realize that you're following a game, you're following football, where and the game is being played by people who have real lives and are dealing with actual tragedies. They're not immune to all of this stuff. I think that's so important. And I if I have to be the one that gives the message, then I will, because so much of this negativity and toxicity happens in the online ecosystem. And yes, players read this kind of stuff too. So a little dose of perspective. The 49ers have been going through a lot of this stuff this year. A little dose of perspective really is important. And I thought that Kyle Shanahan really helped bring that during his conference call today after the 49ers played the Bills. The bad news is coming down like an avalanche on the 49ers. We can shift back to the injuries that have afflicted this team. The league-leading amount of money on injured reserve. Christian McCaffrey and Jordan Mason are now both likely done for the season. Christian McCaffrey with the PCL injury. That's the biggest ligament in the knee. And that's another thing about the internet. Again, these internet doctors who Christian McCaffrey called out about a month ago, who got so much wrong about his recovery from the Achilles tendonitis, probably 90% of them that I saw online yesterday were wrong about what happened out on the field yesterday just because of reckless speculation. People saw Christian McCaffrey slide down and they immediately started zooming in on the video and saying, oh, it looks like his Achilles. It had nothing to do with his Achilles. In fact, he did not even get hurt on the play where he slid down. This was a couple plays earlier on his previous carry. It was the touchdown-saving shoestring tackle by Taylor Rapp. Really illustrates the tragedy of this 49ers season on the football field. That was a potentially season-saving touchdown that turned into a potentially season-ending injury for Christian McCaffrey just because Taylor Rapp got one hand on his shoe. I mean, that's the margin that we're dealing with right now. And those are the type of margins that the NFL constantly operates with, but the 49ers have ended up on the wrong side of them this year. Anyway, he hurt his knee on that play. This had nothing to do with his Achilles, had nothing to do with his calf, didn't have anything to do with overwork or whatever people are trying to pin on Kyle Shanahan in this situation. It is football. Sometimes guys get hurt. Unfortunately for the 49ers, a ton of guys have gotten hurt this year. The injury rate has been through the roof for the 49ers. And you know what? If a team plays 60 games through 3 years and it's got a lot of veteran guys on the roster who've played many of those games, sometimes the odds of injury are a little bit higher than they would be for a team that hasn't accrued that type of mileage. So the 49ers naturally found themselves in between a rock and a hard place this season. And now both Christian McCaffrey and Jordan Mason are out. Is it, you know, somewhat correlated with the fact that this team has played so many games in the past few seasons? Maybe, but each injury is different. And each one definitely has a component of bad luck that is saddled with it. And the 49ers have definitely suffered through their share of bad luck this season. So Mason has a high ankle sprain. That actually is injury that the 49ers did not know about coming out of the game on Sunday. Today, you know, day after adrenaline wears off, you usually learn more about what happened to your football team the day before. And the 49ers learned that Jordan Mason has the high ankle sprain, and the recovery window for those is typically 4 to 6 weeks. 49ers only have 5 weeks left in this regular season. Kevin Givens tore his pectoral muscle. That's a longer range injury. He's likely done for the entire season. Somebody like Javon Hargrave, who tore his triceps muscle back in week 3 against the Rams, there was hope that he'd be back toward the end of the season / the playoffs, but it's increasingly unlikely that the 49ers will make the playoffs, so I doubt that they'll get that kind of depth back at the defensive tackle position. It's the running back position that was most afflicted today, though. And the 49ers are really going to have to scramble there to pick up the pieces and cross the finish line of this 2024 season. My article on the tragedies that have afflicted the 49ers and also the game grades is now up on the San Francisco Standard. I'm going to send it over to Mike, and you can click on the link in the description. So Mike will have that for you in just a few minutes. If you're watching on Twitter, go ahead and go to YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and go into the description. Check out the link on the San Francisco Standard. Talked about Kyle Shanahan on the conference call today. And also went through all of this injury news for the 49ers. My question right now, and I touched on this in the grades article that's up on the screen, is how are the 49ers going to use the rest of 2024 to springboard into 2025? Because I think that just given the sheer amount of injury devastation that this team has faced, given where they're at as a football team right now, you absolutely have to look at this in the big picture. I think even in seasons where the team is in firm Super Bowl contention until the end, you've got to be thinking about next season. You may not be strategizing in a direct way for next season on any given Sunday, but you always have to be thinking about the bigger picture in the NFL because it is such an ephemeral league. Everything seems short-lived. So right now, the focus on 2025 for the 49ers has never been greater, just because they've got so many guys out at this point, and they have so many outstanding questions that are going to be kind of looming there for the 2025 offseason. So there are five games left. There's a sample of five games left that can help give us more data to attack the questions of the 2025 offseason. I am going to pop open a roster, the depth chart that I have, as we go through this, because the 49ers, to begin this week, they're going to have three open 53-man roster spots with these players heading to injured reserve. So first things first, quarterback position. Brock Purdy was fine last night, guys. He played a snow game. I talked about this in my video from Buffalo, from the Buffalo City Hall, in case you missed it. Maybe we'll play that one again in a second. But the consternation about the 49ers quarterback position is so unbelievably biased and lacking of perspective. They played a game in a blizzard yesterday. There's probably one quarterback in the league that is capable of playing well and playing efficiently in that type of blizzard. And he was on the other side. It was Josh Allen. Allen is 6'5", 240. He's built to play in blizzards. Brock Purdy isn't, but Patrick Mahomes isn't. There isn't another quarterback in the NFL that's built to play in a blizzard. Josh Allen, you have to understand, he's got superhuman size for the quarterback position. Superhuman physicality for the quarterback position. He probably could have gotten that memo when he caught a lateral coming off his own pass and dove into the end zone. He's a special, special talent, and the Bills obviously had the advantage given the conditions in this game yesterday. Brock Purdy, despite the fact that everything around him has crumbled this year, is still in the top five of all of these efficiency metrics, the adjusted ones especially, which try to isolate for all the stuff that's gone wrong around him, whether there were drops early in the season, pass protection issues at other points of the season, the lack of a run game, the lack of run blocking at yet other junctures. 49ers are fine around their quarterback, and anybody who has any shred of knowledge regarding the game will tell you the same thing. Kurt Warner went out and was talking about the same thing today. Thought that he really described the dynamic of evaluation in a snow game between Brock Purdy and Josh Allen. I thought he really described that well this morning, because Purdy's an anticipatory quarterback. So let's get that out of the way. The 49ers still have their centerpiece. They're going to use these next five games to continue evaluating Brock Purdy to see with absolute maximal certainty what they have at the quarterback position before the contract negotiation window can open for Brock Purdy. But he has continued to play well. And yesterday in a snow game, if you're trying to make some kind of overarching judgment on Brock Purdy throwing in a blizzard coming off of Lake Erie with huge gusts of wind, and the 49ers as a team struggling so much around him, you're too biased to have a proper conversation with, right? And there's so many people that just want to rain on Brock Purdy's parade or have some kind of crazy take in any direction that they'll focus on something as nonsensical as that. But at the end of the day, it is nonsense, and we have to turn the page and actually talk about substantive football. So with that out of the way, how are the 49ers going to turn around and use the rest of 2024 to springboard their way into 2025? McCaffrey and Mason are both likely done. So what does that do? It moves Isaac Garendo up into running back one. Keep in mind that Isaac Garendo only started one game throughout his entire college career. This was an eminently raw prospect, but one with a ton of potential athletic upside. So this is an opportunity for Garendo to show what he's got as running back one for really the first time in his football career. He was a wide receiver entering college at Wisconsin. So running back one is a new role for Garendo. He started in the bowl game for Louisville coming toward the end of his college career, and now he's going to have a chance to start at running back for the 49ers. He's been a tremendously exciting prospect. The 49ers have been very efficient whenever he's gotten the ball in limited carries. Take a look at this from SF Data 49ers. This was the running back performance in the game yesterday. McCaffrey, Mason, and Garendo were all very, very efficient. EPA per rush, all in the positives. I mean, it's tragic for the 49ers that Christian McCaffrey got hurt in the midst of this performance because the run blocking was finally up to par in front of him. But look at what Garendo was able to do after McCaffrey exited the game. He was nearly as efficient, most commonly running to the left side. That's behind Ben Bartsch and Jalen Moore, two backups on the left side. So we'll get to the offensive line in a second. But the fact that the 49ers were able to consistently run throughout this game, despite the fact that two of their running backs got injured, that bodes really well for the future. They need to rest, recover, return Christian McCaffrey and Jordan Mason, probably in the 2025 season. But for the time being, they're going to be able to give Isaac Garendo some of the first team reps that he's never gotten before. And that's going to be a big focal point over the next five games of this season. Should be an exciting one for those of you who like to follow talent development. Garendo has shown explosiveness. I think he's shown improving vision. He's shown the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. That was actually a run yesterday from Isaac Garendo, and Brock Purdy threw that ball backwards and he scored. Well, it's the kind of thing that you could do when a running back has a receiver's skill set. And I've been the biggest advocate for the 49ers throwing more screen passes this year. That counts as a screen pass. I think they definitely need to incorporate that part of the game with Isaac Garendo even more moving forward. So that's the running back position. 49ers can definitely do their research here over the course of the last five games. Patrick Taylor Jr. is probably going to be called up in the practice squad, and then the 49ers will almost certainly have to sign someone else. No, I do not anticipate them running a lot of Deebo Samuel in the backfield. Probably not the time to put extra bruises on Deebo Samuel. Speaking of that, the whole idea that Deebo Samuel has somehow lost the step continues to be disproven whenever he returns a kickoff. Deebo Samuel looks like the most explosive player on the field between last week at Green Bay and two kick returns yesterday that were really the 49ers highlights of the snowy night in Buffalo. Deebo Samuel's moving fine. The issue has been with the 49ers offense and its inability to leverage even rushing success. They had rushing success yesterday, but they haven't been able to leverage it into separation downfield. These are the two stats that you just have to keep on repeating. The lowest yak in the NFL and the lowest average separation at the time of the catch in the NFL, both numbers that were near the top of the league last year. Stylistically, the offense has completely changed. I think that means that Kyle Shanahan has struggled this year. I don't think that he's had the right counter moves in the chess match with opposing defensive coordinators. I think that the loss of Christian McCaffrey for the first half of the season, the holdout of Brandon Ayuk, and then the season-ending injury to Brandon Ayuk have also had a lot to do with Kyle Shanahan not quite having his fastball. He hadn't been in as good of a situation as he was last year. I really do think the 49ers need to step back, reevaluate what's going wrong from a schematic perspective, the inability to leverage even a strong run game into passing separation. And they're going to, that might be a full offseason project, but it might be able to start. They might be able to get started with it here in this month of December over the final five games. Remember December 2017? 49ers were 1-10 at this point. Jimmy Garoppolo came in and a 1-10 team went 5-0 and finished 6-10. I'm not saying the 49ers are likely to finish with five straight wins here to close this season, but I really do think that the five-game stretch to close 2017 was something that the 49ers were able to build off of. And even though Garoppolo tore his ACL in week three of 2018, the 49ers took some of the confidence they had built in that 2017 win streak and were able to put it back into the tank for 2019 when they went to the Super Bowl. So these seasons, they're all separate, but energy from season to season, confidence from season to season, schematics from season to season can definitely carry over, and the 49ers would be wise to make the end of this one as productive as possible. Look at the receiver position beyond Deebo Samuel. They've got Juwan Jennings under contract for another year. What a bargain he's been. I thought that he was really good again last night, rumbling, stumbling, carrying defenders. They've got to find a way to get Ricky Pearsall more involved over the course of these last five games. Ricky had a big game against Tampa Bay, but he hasn't been targeted a single time over three games since then. So it has to be a point of emphasis over these last five games. That could be where Kyle Shanahan begins his self-evaluation when he's looking how to bridge the pass game to the run game and create some more space and efficiency in the pass game. Pearsall's shown ability. I mean, he was getting open. He's shown rapport with Brock Purdy. We saw that all through the Tampa Bay game, even on the game-winning drive when Purdy moved the 49ers down the field. That's all been on full display. Now it needs to be on consistent display for the 49ers. Hell, maybe they could even get Jacob Cowing mixed into some action. He only played a couple snaps for the 49ers the other day. So that's, to me, that's a huge point of importance for San Francisco moving forward. Find a way to get Ricky Pearsall involved so that he can springboard into 2025. Tight end two, it's only George Kittle that's getting significant snaps at tight end. Eric Saubert only got two snaps at tight end yesterday. I think that the hunt for a tight end two is going to continue for the 49ers this offseason. And you know, Kittle, I think, is a player that they can re-sign now, and they should re-sign now. He's playing top-level football. Yesterday, he was more involved in the run game than he was in the pass game. He unfortunately did drop a screen pass later on, which I thought was a good play call from Kyle Shanahan. But he's playing top-tier football. And I think that he still has prime years left. This, you know, we can knock on wood because injuries are never good. This has been one of the healthier years that we've seen from George Kittle, right? Yeah, of course, he missed a little bit of time. That one game, that was an unfortunate game to miss against Seattle with the hamstring. But I think by and large, at this point, he's healthier than he was in 2023 when he was dealing with a whole bunch of stuff down the stretch. And he's so invaluable toward bridging the 49ers' run in the pass game. If there's a player that you want to keep as a fixture of what's going on for years to come, as a leader, the spirit of that locker room, I think that George Kittle definitely qualifies for the 49ers. Then we look at the offensive line. Trent Williams, by the way, he's going to try to make it back this season. Kyle Shanahan said that he's working hard. He was in that walking scooter last week, and I saw Trent in the locker room. I actually saw Nick Bosa walk up and give him a big hug. They talked for a while. In retrospect, I do wonder if the tragedy, which had occurred on November 24th, was part of that discussion. Because, I mean, you observe how these guys have to deal with some of the maybe the hardest parts of their lives. And the 49ers and Williams have definitely been battling through a lot this year. But Kyle Shanahan said that Williams is going to try to fight through and actually return this season from the ankle injury that is currently afflicting him. It is no rush, though, because Jalen Moore has been playing really well. The thing about Jalen Moore is that he is on the final year of his contract. So will the 49ers re-sign Jalen Moore? Can they re-sign him at a bargain? Does every game that he plays and plays well cause his price tag to increase potentially beyond the 49ers range? These are all questions to ponder, right? It's all very, very interesting stuff moving forward with Jalen Moore, their 2021 fifth round draft pick who might have finally turned a corner here in this fourth year in the NFL. Aaron Banks was drafted in the same class as Jalen Moore. Jalen Moore went in the fifth round, and Aaron Banks went in the second round. Banks is out currently with a concussion. Ben Bartsch replaced Banks yesterday, and Ben Bartsch gave the 49ers one of their best run-blocking games of the season. It's really hard to evaluate the pass blocking in a blizzard because the defensive line and the pass rushers didn't have much footing. But Bartsch in the run game was really, really impressive. Now, with Ben Bartsch, the 49ers picked him up off of the Jacksonville practice squad in 2023. They poached him off the practice squad. They then re-signed him to a one-year deal. So he's also going to be hitting free agency after this year for the 49ers. They have to evaluate him to see that they might really have something. Ben Bartsch suffered a dislocated knee in 2022. So he never was fully back up to speed in 2023. But the 49ers took a flyer on him. They poached him off that Jacksonville practice squad thinking, hey, maybe this guy can get up to full strength and he could be a player for us come that 2025 season. And I think the first indications yesterday after a really successful training camp for Ben Bartsch were very, very strong. Remember, Aaron Banks is also not under contract beyond this season for the 49ers, meaning that they've got a lot of decisions to make on how to stock up that interior line, and they can use these last five games as intel. They can figure out what they potentially want to do at center. They've got Jake Brendel starting there right now, Nick Zekel waiting in the wings, 2022 draft pick, former roommate of Brock Purdy behind him, Spencer Burford still on this football team. I do think that investment will continue in the offensive line over the course of this offseason, and there are a lot of decisions to make up and down the roster for the 49ers. You know who they have at a decent rate right now is Colton McKivitz. It's not going to be a popular take, but it's an accurate one, so I don't care. Colton McKivitz has actually been playing solid football, especially over the past few weeks for the 49ers. The improvement curve for Colton McKivitz has been very good, and it gives the 49ers the luxury of having a tackle at the price range of under $5 million while they're trying to plug and improve, you know, all these other holes on the roster and improve all these other facets of the football team. It is the 49ers defense that is truly lagging right now. And you see all the injuries on the defensive side between Nick Bosa, Jordan Elliott, Fred Warner, obviously playing to the broken ankle, Diamador Lenore. I mean, it makes sense that the level of play has deteriorated sharply. But while it does make sense, it should not have deteriorated as sharply as it has. There are some fundamental things that the 49ers are constantly doing wrong. Interestingly, today, Kyle Shanahan came to a very strong defense of Nick Sorensen, the 49ers defensive coordinator. And I could relay it to you right now. Shanahan blamed things defensively more on himself than on his first-year coordinator, Nick Sorensen. He said, I'm very satisfied with Nick. I'm not at all satisfied with the results and how it's going right now, but some of the mistakes that we've made, I don't think, or what's happened here in the last 2 weeks, I don't think that's a schematic issue. It's a little bit more of a fundamental issue. And it also starts with me. That goes to all coaching, and it goes down to the players. It goes to everyone in this building, but the results here the last 2 weeks haven't changed my opinion on Nick. So Kyle Shanahan seemed to imply that Nick Sorensen is calling a schematically sound defense, but the 49ers players aren't executing it on a fundamental level, and that some of the drilling and some of the instruction methods that the 49ers are using holistically as a staff have not hit the mark with the defense this year. Regardless of what the truth is, there is underperformance. I don't know exactly what's behind the underperformance, but I will tell you that the 49ers are way too reliant on Nick Bosa. If the entire defense falls apart to high school level statistics the second that Nick Bosa exits, and that's what's happened ever since he got hurt against Seattle, whatever the 49ers have constructed is too flimsy. It's not resilient enough. There's a lack of resilience in this defense right now. Charvarius Ward committed a penalty on illegal contact, third and long. Second drive, Buffalo had gone three and out once. Buffalo was about to go three and out again. The second three and out was nullified by the Charvarius Ward penalty. Okay, that happens in football, right? Sometimes you're penalized, you have to stay on the field. Well, get off the field on the next set of downs. No, the 49ers didn't do that. They let Buffalo march right down the field and score a touchdown against them. And then it was on from that point on. The boat race was on. 49ers had absolutely no chance defensively after just one penalty. So Bosa had been somewhat of a resilient force. At least he projected that energy onto the rest of the defense. He had been a plus pass rusher that had changed the matchups up front because the double teams that he absorbed. He had played the run well. I mean, Bosa's an all-pro player, right? But to lose Bosa and to tank and crater the way that the 49ers have is something that just is alarming. It's unacceptable. And it is a design flaw that the 49ers are going to have to address over the course of this offseason. What do they do in the D-line room? What do they do on the interior and exterior? What do they do at linebacker? I'm most excited here over the last five games to see Dre Greenlaw come back. It may be still a couple games away, But if and when he does come back and the 49ers are expecting him to, how does he set himself up for free agency? Because remember that next season, Dre Greenlaw is currently an unrestricted free agent. So the 49ers have some decisions to make there, and they certainly would like some more data to help inform them on the Dre Greenlaw front. Yesterday, there was one more interesting note for the 49ers. The secondary, they ran Nick McCloud, who they just picked up after the Tampa game last month. A special teams guy who just got promoted to the 53-man roster. While Deometer Lenore was out, McCloud played nickelback on first and second down, and then Renardo Green slid over to play nickelback on third downs. So Lenore might still be out for a little bit. They just invested a big contract in him, so they want to make sure he's 100%. They could potentially see what they have with Nick McCloud. And before you scoff at that, their highest graded defender yesterday was Nick McCloud. I talk about the interior defensive line. 49ers got good play from Khalil Davis and Evan Anderson, two young guys yesterday at defensive tackle. Not much else was good for the defensive line, but the two guys inside, those may be building blocks for the 49ers moving forward. It was an embarrassing performance for the defense. I want to say 2.5 straight embarrassing performances. Half the game against Seattle, the entire game against Green Bay, and this game against the Buffalo Bills. All of that without Nick Bosa. They have to find a way to be more cohesively effective without their star player and without Fred Warner playing on a fully healthy ankle. All right, I may add a couple questions. Let's see if I have any good ones coming through here in the comment section. So Steve Wilks did not have the 49ers as a top five defense. The 49ers defense was number 10 last season, and they were the number 26 rushing defense. We need to let go of this idea that Steve Wilks was doing a great job coordinating the 49ers defense, because he wasn't. They're worse this year, but the Wilks defense last year fell tremendously from where the DeMeco Ryans defense was before him. It was not a top five defense. It was number 10 in EPA per play. I think this is a more accurate comment. Steve Wilks inherited DeMeco Ryans players and went downhill. The 49ers offense pulled them through. Yes, that helps describe a little bit of what happened last year. The offense was bailing out the defense time and time again. There's a reason they moved on from Steve Wilks. It wasn't working. Nobody's saying that this year's working, but this year's an independent case of 2023. Just because 2024 is sliding for the 49ers doesn't all of a sudden make 2023 a good defensive effort from the team. Is it possible the 49ers let Hufanga and Greenlaw walk after this season? It's possible that anything happens. The 49ers need to collect as much data as possible over the last five games. Hufanga is going to be one of the players they hope returns, so they can collect the data that they need and figure things out heading into the offseason. All right, I answered a couple questions. That was good. Thank you for those. And everybody, thanks for paying attention to the important message at the start of this video. It has been a year of tragedy for the 49ers. Sometimes the adversity just accumulates to a place where it's impossible to overcome. And it looks like the 49ers might be at that spot. It's unpredictable, but it's life. And you can't go on crying about everything that happens in life. You have to realize that sometimes things are bigger than football in this case. And the 49ers are dealing with those as well. All right, that's your 49ers update. Enjoy Monday Night Football. We'll talk to you soon.